Hi, I'm Spencer.
And I'm Blake.
And you're about to get jumped.
Welcome to episode 60 of Blake and Spencer Get Jumped, a weekly podcast where we watch the anime so you don't have to.
But you should still totally watch the anime.
This week on Get Jumped, we're watching JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, episode 31 through 34, which starts with the battle between Magician's Red and a newsstand Silver Chariot.
Hold on, I thought we already did an episode of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure with chariots.
That was a different kind of chariot. Those were like literal chariots, and this is like a metaphorical chariot.
So does he have a chariot?
There's not actually any chariots involved in this.
So you're telling me that JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is obsessed with chariots? It's really just a show all about chariots.
I guess I can't deny that.
All right, that is new canon, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, a show about chariots. Let's jump in.
JoJo's Chariot Adventure.
Anyways, hey everybody. So we don't have a lot going on this week. I'm not watching much of anything other than the newest episode every week of My Hero Academia. But are you watching anything else?
Me?
Yeah.
I actually have watched a couple more episodes of Boruto. Just waiting for it to get better, and it's kind of is and kind of isn't. Like,
yeah.
It's real slice of lifey. I'm like 8 or 9 episodes in, and it seems like we're turning a corner on the arc and starting to get into like the actual meat and potatoes of it, but it's definitely still a lot more like school hijinks and low stakes whatever than I'm into.
Yeah. I'm actively watching like one anime right now other than the ones that we watch for the show, which is just that. And then my other time of TV watching is spent rewatching Brooklyn Nine-Nine and also watching Man in the High Castle.
Okay, I thought, hadn't you watched that before but you didn't like it?
So Man in the High Castle has a first season which is okay.
I've only watched the first season, and that's what I felt about it, too.
Yes. So the biggest reason that I think that the first season is just okay is just because of how much it focuses on this this escape to, like, the demilitarized zone. Kind of like it's the neutral zone between the occupied Japanese territories and the occupied German territories. And the biggest reason that it's so boring is that the weird slice of life taking a part of the United States in two different ways and turning it into a completely new country in kind of like a weird, like history, weird inversion of history is one of the things that I think makes this show so interesting and what makes the book interesting in the first place. Uh-huh. And they spent too long outside of that. The second season is really doubled down on going back into like, you know, understanding what had happened inside of the world of this like false history or whatever it is. I'm not going to give away spoilers because it's relatively new. It's still coming out with new seasons.
Yeah. I think the third season premieres sometime in the next couple of months or something.
Yeah. But season two is good. I'm enjoying it. I am about halfway through it, and I am happy to say that it is less shitty than the first season.
I was going to say, I felt like season one, having only watched that so far, I thought that the finale of season one was fantastic. And I felt like everything else up until that point was something that I wanted to like, but didn't particularly. And it felt kind of like the show spun its wheels a lot. Like, I think that characters kind of do the same thing a couple of times throughout the season and kind of like circle back to where they were.
Yeah.
But in ways that don't feel like they're coming back with like a new perspective or as a changed person, but more like the plot just kind of is resetting or is hitting the same beats. And yeah, I felt like maybe it was a little too decompressed or that the writers didn't know exactly where they were going or they knew where they were going, but not how to not get there too quickly. So they just kind of like loitered about a little bit, and it had some interesting world building, but the actual plot itself was just kind of slow paced, even though it was supposed to be really intense, and it just didn't work for me that well.
Yeah, if you don't know by now from listening to our show, Blake and I are kind of writing wonks.
That's true.
So we'll spend a lot of time kind of like decompressing something as far as we can when we're working on it, and also when other people are working on stuff. So like we spend a lot of time doing that, but I think that that's kind of you know, why we enjoy anime as well, is that we can compartmentalize the weird, strange things and then get to like the meat and potatoes of what's going on. But with that being said, let's go ahead and jump into this week's episodes of JoJo, because that really segues well into a couple of episodes that are all both really good and real dumb at the same time.
Yes, I think based on what we have seen so far, that dumb but good is kind of peak JoJo. And I'm kind of okay with it. Like, I pretty much enjoy it. As much as I would roll my eyes periodically or think that something was dumb, I pretty much enjoyed all of these episodes across the board this week for various reasons. So, okay, this is... I hope this isn't going to be too complicated of a previously on. So, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, we're in part 3, which is called Stardust Crusaders. It's kind of an anthology series, so parts 1 and 2 are connected to part 3 in loose ways. Part 3 actually has a stronger connection to the first two parts than I would say part 2 has to part 1. But whatever. What we've got going on right now, our main characters are JoJo. I usually write them as JoJo Jr. or JoJo Sr., or really just JoJo and JoJo Sr. The thing with the show is that it sort of jumps ahead a generation each, or maybe even two generations each time it starts a new series. And the protagonists, their last name is Joestar, and their first name, it always starts with J-O. And so they always go by JoJo. So our main protagonist, I think his name is Jotaro Joestar. And then the JoJo Senior, I don't remember. I think he's Jonathan. I can't remember if it's Jonathan or Joseph. Anyway, they both go by JoJo. So we got them. Then there's Avdol, which is JoJo Senior's right-hand man. And Kakyoin, who was a guy that was a villain and then became friends with them after having a fight with JoJo. Each of these characters have what's called a stand. And the stand is this universe's, or at least this anthology series, part 3's version of the magical, awesome, crazy abilities that people in anime usually have, or at least the anime that we watch. Stands are kind of like familiars. They are forms that appear and kind of summoned by the stand user and do battle on their behalf, and they have special different powers. So JoJo Jr. has something called Star Platinum, which is basically super fast punching guy. JoJo Sr., I don't remember what his is, but his thing is hilarious. He's able to make pictures of the future using a Polaroid camera, but he must destroy the camera in the process, which is an expensive and extremely limited stand, but is kind of hilarious and will actually get an expansion of its powers in the last episode we're covering. Avdol, the right-hand man, he has something called Magician's Red, which looks like a dude with a bird head and controls fire. And then Kakyoin has something called Hierophant Green, which is a vaguely humanoid thing that can kind of slither in shape and is pretty fast. Also, all the stands tend to have some sort of color in their name. And in this series, they are connected to tarot cards. So we'll see a couple of tarot cards here. The main villain of the series is Dio. He is actually the main villain of the first series as well. He became a vampire in that series. His head was separated from his body and sunk to the bottom of the ocean. Since then, he has been brought back to the surface. He has attached his undead head onto the body of the original JoJo and is now gonna try and take out the Joestar line. Dio, because he attached to the original JoJo, got his own stand, which can do something similar to JoJo Senior, although I suspect it has quite a few other abilities that we haven't seen yet, but we don't know yet. And he has amassed a large group of underlings who are all out to kill the JoJo crew and before they can make it all the way to Dio. In addition to this, Holly, JoJo Jr.'s mother and Senior's daughter, has recently fallen ill because she has started to manifest her own stand. But unlike the guys, she has not trained for combat, so she is not mentally and spiritually strong enough to wield a stand. And so the stand basically is attacking her because it's using up too much of her life energy or some shit. I don't remember exactly why, but killing Dio is the key to unlocking the cure for Holly, or maybe Dio's presence is part of what's killing her or something like that. Basically, it's another motivation for them to go after Dio. They have a time frame. They've got quite a while from where we are in the series to before the time is up. And in the last episode, they ended up at a cafe. They were trying to have lunch, and then this silver-haired guy came over and attacked them with his stand, which uses a sword, and we're about to learn all about that in episode 31.
Yeah. So this episode is very, very focused on one single fight. Every single episode inside of this four parts that we're going to go over focuses exclusively on a fight between the stand user and one of our crew members.
Which so I really liked. I'm into that. I mean, I love a fight that stretches, and I like ongoing plots. But I like that each of these is kind of just a vignette where it's like set up, here's where we are in the journey, here's the circumstances we're going to be dealing with, and then they just do a battle. And the battles are all pretty good. I really liked this week.
Yeah. So episode 31, Silver Chariot, we have Jean-Pierre Polnareff, and he is a French guy who's being super French and deciding to be a complete dick. So his ability is he is able to stab through things and cut through things at such speed and accuracy that he cuts nothing with nothing, and it pierces through the veil and can cut through anything.
Yeah, he doesn't really explain what cut nothing and nothing means, but it kind of sounds cool, so whatever.
Yeah, so one of the things that he's going to do to explain what his power does is he's going to throw some coins up into the air, and then they are going to still have some fire in the middle of the air as well. So he's going to stab through the coins and through the fire, which shows that he can cut through flame, and for some reason the flame will stay there.
Yeah.
That doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because that's not how fire works.
He basically separates the four coins with some fire, and it looks like kind of a cheap trick when he first throws up the coins, because it's like, okay, he threw up four coins and he stabbed them. Like, that's fast and kind of impressive, but whatever. But then you realize that between each coin stabbing, he also stabbed some fire. It doesn't hold up logically, but sure, he's fast, he's dangerous. And then they decide that they're going to go somewhere else to fight, because right now they're in a restaurant. And in fact, it's like the first couple episodes I write him as Jean-Pierre, and then later on they start just calling him Polnareff, and so we might use both. They're the same guy. So Jean-Pierre is like, you can't, you know, I'm going to fight you, I'll kill you each one at a time, and he's kind of facing off against Avdol at first, and he's like, well, you've got all these fire powers, you can't really unleash them in this restaurant, so let's go somewhere where you can use your powers to the fullest, which is part of that sort of like warrior chivalry that you see all the time in anime. And so they go to this place called the Tiger Ball Garden.
Especially in JoJo.
Yeah, that's true.
It's real prevalent in JoJo. It's like their other superpower is chivalry.
Yeah.
So except for when, you know, they're being horribly sexist.
Well, yeah, you know, chivalry to other men, obviously. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So,
luckily there's not going to be a lot of that. But anyways,
Barely any this time.
except for that whole episode, but whatever. Anyways, so Abdal is going to fight by using his fire powers to shoot out a couple of fireballs.
They're in the shape of Ankhs, silver... which I like.
No, no, no. That's not what happens first. He shoots out fireballs, and they get knocked away by Silver Chariot. And
he cuts nothing with nothing.
He throws the fireballs into the statue and then carves the look of Magician Red into the statue. Don't forget about that, because that's going to be a plot point that's actually relevant.
It's sort of important.
So then he's like, I'm going to use it. And then older Joseph is just like, oh shit, he's going to use it. And I was thinking, oh, this is going to be like fucking like solar beam or something. Some kind of badass superpower. But instead he just uses more fire, except for it's in the shape of an Ankh this time. Which, yeah. I'm like, I don't know what's different about this than all of the other fire you've used before.
Yeah. But
sure. I guess it's your ultimate power.
Right. Magician's Red is kind of, like, cool the first 1 to 2 times you see it. And then, so far, nothing has really been done to expand on the power. And it's basically just each new attack is just more fire than the last time. And it's
more not... fire than the last fire!
Yeah, it's not super imaginative, and is kind of a letdown, but the fight's alright. Okay. This is a decent fight.
So, yeah, so he's gonna use this fire, then he's going to get it knocked back on him. It's gonna make it look like he's been lit on fire. Abdal is going to get completely knocked down. He can't focus, it looks like, and... Magician's Red has been lit on fire, but secretly it was not Magician's Red. It was the statue that had been carved into the shape of Magician's Red that had been thrown in fire at the stand. That was broken apart, and then it rained fire on Silver Chariot, lighting Silver Chariot on fire. And then as they're like walking away, being like, well, he's dead, Silver Chariot explodes off of his armor.
Like fireworks. It's so dramatic.
Yeah, and he fucking like lifts up Jean-Pierre for some reason.
No reason.
And flips him over and like shows him that he's holding him backwards.
Yeah, he
and
also like
for some reason he's like... He's like, this is how fast he's become. And I was like, how does that show that he's fast?
He lifted you up at a normal speed. Like, maybe how strong he is to lift you so effortlessly, but he did not lift you up quickly. And he's like, yeah, did you see how he lifted me there? How fucking fast is he? And I'm like, what are you watching, dude?
I was so confused. Whatever. So they're going to get into more of a fight. We're going to see the thing that happens in every anime, which is that somebody is going to move so fast that it looks like they have shadow clones.
The only double anime team.
Yeah, and the only anime that we have not seen that in yet has been, I guess, Cowboy Bebop. But anyways.
Yeah, he just moves normal fast.
Yeah. Anyways, so he is going to say that he's like, now that he's thrown off his armor, think of this as turtle shells if you're in Dragon Ball, or weights if you're in Dragon Ball, or armor if you're in Dragon Ball.
Or weights if you're in Naruto. This happens in fucking every anime. Even when it doesn't, it does. Because there's always a character that's wearing some piece of clothing that looks innocuous, and then when they're losing a fight, they get permission from someone to take off that piece of clothing, which turns out to be a comically heavy weight. Yeah. Which they somehow, like, you know, you think about, like, Lee is wearing these, like, I don't know, hundreds of pound weights on each of his feet, but he never cracks the ground when he steps anywhere, like...
I know.
Anyway, so they do that. That's the armor, and then he does double team, and then...
So... He's doing this, and it turns out that he is very good at moving so fast that he can make himself look like there are many of himself. However, it doesn't actually do anything to the speed of the fire that's being thrown at him. Instead, Abdal's just like, I have a secret. It's that I can make lots of these Ankhs at the same time. And I was like, bitch, that's the same thing, except for more of them.
My special ability is to do the same thing, but more.
Yeah, it's just whatever. It's bubble beam instead of bubble. Anyways, so... he uses this ability and shoots some onks out, and Silver Chariot's able to dodge them until one of them shoots out from underground underneath Abdal and lights him on fire, which is one of the only points where I was just like, nah, that's kind of baller, because he ripped a hole in the ground with an old explosion of one of the onks, and then shot a fire underground after Abdal walked over the top of it. It
which was a very made me think about that fight with Naruto and Neji.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyways, so then my favorite part of maybe this whole week happens, which is Polnareff has been caught on fire and he is burning to death, and Abdal tosses him a dagger and is like, here, burning to death is one of the worst ways to die. Use that dagger to kill yourself. Oh, it's so baller. And then they just like walk away, and then Polnareff basically contemplates throwing the dagger after Abdal to try and take him out too, and then decides not to, and decides that the chivalrous thing to do would be to allow himself to burn to death after all. And so, because he did this, he has demonstrated himself to be a man of honor, and Avdol has Magician's Red remove the flames from him and spare his life. And then they look, and he's got one of those fleshbud things on his head. So he's being mind-controlled, and, like, they were about to fucking off this guy, so I guess it doesn't really matter that these people are unwitting pawns as long as you kill them. But they're not going to kill Polnareff. Jojo uses his Star Platinum to take the flesh bud out, which I guess if you haven't listened to these episodes before, Dio has the ability to put these like little tiny flesh creature tentacle things into people's foreheads to mind control them to follow his lead. And so this is what happened to Polnareff. They removed that, and now he is alive again and normal. Yeah. And then there's a little bit of story time with Jean-Pierre Polnareff, where he says that he's looking for the person who killed his sister. That is, like, his whole deal. It was a guy that had two right hands. And he actually accuses JoJo Sr. of being that guy because JoJo is wearing gloves, even though you can clearly see, despite the gloves, that JoJo has his thumbs on the right side, so he has normal hands.
Hold on. My favorite thing about this is that he's like, he had two right hands. And then older Joseph shows him the robotic hand, and it doesn't occur to anybody that, yeah, it's a robot hand. Maybe it can flip around and then be two right hands.
That's fair. JoJo may be the killer.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. This is legitimately somebody who could probably do that with a robot arm. So I was just like, why does everybody just like, oh, whew, I guess that's not the guy.
Bullet I'm just dodged. Like,
anyways, they're going to learn all about that, and then they're going to go get on a ship, which is where we go into our next episode, in episode 32, Dark Blue Moon, which has a... it's a mix of getting a new character that doesn't fucking matter.
Who literally has not gotten a name yet.
Yes. They literally don't explain who this person is. And then there is a dumb fight that happens for almost no dumb reason. Other than it's cool, I guess.
Well, it's a fighting anime, and that's why it happens. Also, at the beginning of this episode, so they're on a boat that they're taking to Singapore, because they can't fly to... They have to get to Egypt. That's where Dio is. And they can't fly there, because when they tried to fly there, they were attacked, and the plane almost went down, or it did go down, or some shit. And so it's too dangerous for them to fly, and it puts too many other people at risk. So they're taking
boats. When
Blake
says it either went down or didn't go down or some shit, what he means by that is the anime literally doesn't show us.
That's true. So they're taking boats now to put fewer people at risk. And at the beginning of this episode, they're like, they're taking this boat to Singapore. And then you see them in the boat with the city, like, in the distance. Like, they're in the bay pretty close, like, a couple of minutes from docking. And then by the end of this episode, they're in the middle of the fucking ocean, as though that's where they had been this whole time. And that bugged me. But anyway, they're on their way to Singapore on a boat.
So there is this girl that's there.
Everybody thinks it's a boy because she has a hat on, and nobody can fucking tell because that's how people work.
There's also this brief moment at the very start where they do this, like, last time on JoJo, remember how Holly's sick? Anyways, let's go.
Yeah.
So that's what happens on that. But anyways, this girl is a girl, and she jumps off the boat, and there's sharks in the water, and JoJo goes down with Star Platinum and punches a fucking shark to death, which is pretty cool.
I loved it. It was so campy, but in the right way. It was great. It made me think about when Pete and I went to see the Meg, and it was the same kind of thing where it was like, this is stupid, but it's fun. And this is the same thing. Punch a shark. Why not?
Anyways, there's also a stand in the water. This stand is going to be called Dark Blue Moon. It's because it's, I guess, mischievous like a moon is.
Well,
because
there's a tarot card, and that's what that's the theme that we're sticking to, is that each stand has to correspond to a tarot card, and that's where it basically gets its name based off of the moon tarot card, and it's called Dark Blue because it's colored a dark blue. And that's how they name everything in this show so far.
It's stupid. Anyways.
especially because remember how, like, the first couple of stands, tarot cards are not mentioned one time. And then somebody has a tarot card specific power and talks about how tarot cards are important. And that's how they named their stand. And ever since then, every stand has been related to a tarot card explicitly. And it was like the author came up with this idea, like, way after he'd already established the groundwork and was like, fuck it. We're do it live. We're going for it.
Okay. Anyways, so the rest of this fight is just going to be all devolving into what is the stand? Who is the stand owner? Oh, it's the captain. We knew it the immediately because he's the only guy Yeah, he comes down, and he also, like, when he walks onto the ship, everybody's just like, who could it be? And then he comes, and, like, the camera angle, like, swings underneath him.
Yeah, and it's just coming, like, from a low angle with his face shadowed, and he's standing behind the unnamed girl, like, super creepily with a creepy music undertone. And, like, literally the second after, they're like, well, who could be the stand user?
And I was like, also, all of the other people that are drawn on the boat that don't have stands are drawn like normal human being size. And this one guy is the new beefcake. And you were just like, oh, it's this guy.
Oh, my God. Also, his name is Captain Dragon, which is the best. And if I were ever a captain, that is absolutely what I would go by.
Anyways, this stand that we're going to find out about has a couple of abilities. The first ability is to be beaten to hell and then thrown into the water by Star Platinum, only to find out that by bleeding his own blood onto Star Platinum, it turns into barnacles and it starts to sap the life out of Star Platinum. So Star Platinum decides, well, if I can't get rid of this, or JoJo does, he's like, if I can't get rid of this, let's jump into the fucking water.
Well, he's actually being pulled into the water by the barnacles. I think they weigh him down, or they have some sort of magnetic force or something that pulls him into the water. And so he, like, allows himself to be pulled in exchange for saving the unnamed girl.
Yeah. So he goes in, there's a whirlpool, they're fighting in the water. They can have a lot of communication back and forth underneath the water.
Before he gets pulled into the water, there's a really funny part where, like, so this is, the captain tries to take the girl into the ocean. Star Platinum punches the captain and his stand into the water and saves the girl. Before we realize there are all these barnacles, there's, like, this shot of JoJo standing with Avdol and Polnareff, and he's like, Avdol, say something cool. And Avdol's like, I guess you like didn't see those punches coming or something like that. And then Polnareff repeats something that Avdol said to him in the previous episode, that you're 10 years too early, but it doesn't match with what Avdol said. And it's hilarious. I loved this moment.
It's real dumb, and I think that the show is at its best when it's poking fun at itself. You're going to see way more of that at the end of the episode with a probably the best line in the show so far, but we'll get to that.
Oh,
anyways,
fuck, I forgot about that. It's hilarious. This episode has some great comedy beats, and the fight is pretty good too.
Yeah, the fight is actually pretty sick.
Sorry, so, I just read one of my notes about JoJo saying when he says the sleeps with the fishes. So the captain is accused of being the stand user. And so this actually happens, I'm all over the place here. This happens before the punching. This is right before they fight, when they realize that Captain Dragon is the stand user. And they're like, yeah, but like you're supposed, you know, they were like, it couldn't be the captain because he was vouched for by the Speedwagon organization, which is one that they're connected to. And the captain's like, well, the real captain sleeps with the fishes. And JoJo goes, then you can sleep at the bottom of hell.
Anyways, so Deep Blue Moon has created a whirlpool. JoJo and Star Platinum are now in the said whirlpool, and they are fighting underwater. As we've learned before from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, nobody has to breathe underwater, so they can just hold their breath for as long as it fucking takes.
They're also able to speak underwater because they are stand users. Regardless of whether or not their stands are aquatic, they and their stands are able to talk with perfect clarity underwater because reasons.
Yeah.
It would have been so easy to say that stands can talk underwater so that you don't have to break those rules or, like, take that logical leap that humans have to, like, breathe and you're letting water into your mouth. But no, they can just speak.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the rest of the fight happens pretty quickly. There's a couple of back and forth between Deep Blue Moon and JoJo. We also see that Deep Blue Moon's other ability is that he can throw a whole bunch of scales into the water that are, like, razor sharp. And he's thrown so many of them around inside the whirlpool that the only place that's safe is towards the center, which is right where Deep Blue Moon wants him and the captain wants him. And he thinks that he's going to be able to take him down there.
It also prevents JoJo's allies from jumping into the whirlpool to help because they can't get through the razor barrier.
Yeah. So the other thing that we're going to see is that Star Platinum is being almost completely covered in barnacles. Because of this, he's not able to move correctly, so he keeps on getting hit by the far faster Deep Blue Moon. And also, Deep Blue Moon, every time he gets hit, it doesn't really seem to, like, affect him that much. Except when Star Platinum decides that he's going to focus all of his energy into two of his fingers and then literally just, like, stab his fingers through Deep Blue Moon's head.
Like, and then lost on Full Metal Alchemist.
Yeah. And then after he does that, he says the most ridiculous thing, which is, good. I hope you didn't pee yourself when you died, because that would be fucking gross since we're both in the water.
Yeah. Specifically, Deep Blue Seas guy is like, I bet you were thinking that you would, like, take me out with this move or whatever. And he's just like, no, I was thinking, I hope you don't pee yourself.
Anyways, he's going to defeat the captain. He's going to defeat the stand. He's going to get out of the water. They're going to get on the ship, but the ship also explodes.
But, like, in reasons. A way that does not physically harm or threaten them in any way. Like, it explodes to the point that they don't have a ship anymore, but not to the point that they are killed or harmed in the explosion. There's not even a sequence of them, like, being particularly upset about it. They're just like, ah, he rigged it to explode when he died.
Yeah. Also, the ship explodes, and then there is another ship immediately that pulls up on them. Nobody questions this at all, and I'm literally... Okay, I legitimately think that the whole reason that this ship exists at all, you'll find out in the next episode, is because the author wanted to do one thing that happens at the beginning of the next episode. They get on the ship, and we're in episode 33, Strength. So, there's going to be some shit where Dio talks about real quick.
We're going to see...
Can I just tell you?
Yeah, go for it. You seem very passionate about this moment.
So... they're going to be getting onto the ship. They're going to notice a couple of things on the ship. First and foremost, they're going to find out there's an orangutan that's downstairs.
Who's super fucking creepy.
He's got like creeper eyes.
Yeah.
Number two,
they keep they're gonna focusing walk around. On his eyes. It's
yeah.
horrible.
They're going to wander around on the ship, and they're just like, I wonder why there's nobody on the ship. And number three, and I'm thinking this is the only reason this stand exists in the first place, is that there's a sailor that's standing there, and you should tell that he is being fucking redshirted, and then they swing down a hook from the air to stab him through the head. And it's one of the most...
take his body into the skies.
Oh my god, it's one of the most brutal, crazy shits I've ever seen.
This is like, the sailor is standing there with like four or five other sailors. They're all looking at the same thing. This one guy gets got. And then JoJo's like, you guys, something's wrong on this ship. Don't touch or get near anything that moves or is mechanical. And they just fucking stand there. Like, they're definitely in the blast radius for like two straight more minutes before they're like, okay, we'll go.
Okay. So, meanwhile,
also,
there's some
don't
shit
get attached
happening
to
Dio.
The sailors.
So what's happening with Dio, Blake?
Oh, Dio, he's got one of his subordinates is named Enyaba, and she's like Baba Yaga. She's like the kind of crone-ish, stooped over witch-like old woman. She's probably going to be one of the final bosses before they fight Dio, and Dio's kind of like pensive or upset about something, and he talks about the nature of living and that his ambition is to overcome fear. And Inyaba's like, you don't have anything to be afraid of, you're immortal. And he's like, well, I'm actually afraid of the Joestar family, which is why I want them to be killed before they get here. And Inyaba's like, well, that's going to be fine because there's seven stands on the move to kill them. And she lists the stands based on their tarot cards, not based on their actual stand names or abilities or appearances. And it is seven stands that we haven't seen. So this is excluding the moon from last episode. There are seven stands at least between us and the Dio Cabal that they're heading towards in Egypt. We're going to see one in this episode and one in the next one. But I get pretty pumped about the fact that there are like at least seven cool more fights coming up.
Yeah, seven
Although,
new bosses.
Yeah, this boss isn't my favorite.
Yeah, this boss is going to be obnoxious and really gross. Anyways,
there's
this
also
girl...
going to be... Oh, yeah. There's a moment where the girl that still doesn't have a name, even in the next episode where she continues to be a character that they are traveling with, she has not been named even once. So she goes... And she's looking at the orangutan who is, I guess, trying to... I thought this is not what turns out to be the case. I thought that the people that had been on the boat had been killed and one of them had been turned into an orangutan. That's not actually the case, but that's what I thought was happening. And so the monkey starts, like, he lights a cigarette, he puts on a hat, and he reads a Playboy all to, like, demonstrate what I thought was his secret humanness. And I was like, well, this is just Boat of the Rise of the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Well, yeah. Except for what we're going to find out is that when Joseph and Star Platinum come inside of the room, they are going to be attacked by walls these walls are going to try to eat and destroy them, and it turns out that the orangutan is somewhat sentient into the way that he can control a stand, and also he has the ability to have a stand that is an entire ship.
Yeah, and basically their whole thing is that the stand is huge, and so you have to be really strong to control it, and they mentioned earlier a couple of times that orangutans are about 10 times stronger than humans. So I guess that's what they're going for. Also, Spencer, you forgot about the really uncomfortable fan service shower that happens.
I almost don't even want to bring it up. I like.
Well,
it's gross. Really gross, and it's like
she is presented as very young, and is explicitly called a child in the next episode. But in this episode, she goes to take a shower, and we see almost everything, including her like huge breasts. And her butt, and it's really uncomfortable. in general, because Spencer and I have both gone on the record as not being fans of this kind of fan service, but also because she's a child, it's gross.
It's additional grossness.
Yeah. Because
it's like, why did you feel that you need to do this? And also it makes us orangutan, like...
And he pervs evil out over it. And like, yeah, I don't know. And I was like, okay, well, she looks much older because she's like... she's wearing kind of baggy clothes when we meet her, and then she like takes her clothes off to take the shower, and I was like, oh, she has the body of like an adult woman. I guess she's one of those anime characters who looks way younger than she is. And then again in the next episode she is explicitly stated to be a child. Like, maybe there's some fucking reveal later on where she's like 80 years old or some shit, but like right now what has happened is that a child took a shower on screen to titillate the viewers, and I fucking hate it.
Yes. So that is one of the most obnoxious things instead of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure that happens every once in a while. But meanwhile, we're going to get the same fucking trick-ish happening again to defeat this villain from the last fucking episode. They're going to have, like, Joseph use Star Platinum to, like, stab at this monkey character that's controlling everything and can get inside of his stand, which is a boat. And then he's gonna also just, like, fucking throw something into the monkey's head, and then they're gonna all of a sudden be escaping the boat and then getting onto a new life raft boat, and then the new, like, the boat stand is gonna collapse into the ocean.
Yeah.
This episode is weird and strange, and a lot of things I don't like about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Yeah.
This is the dud of the four that we're covering today. Like, correct. Probably just skip it.
Anyways, so this next episode is called episode 34, The Devil.
I liked this episode a lot.
Yeah, so absurd, this episode...
But I'm into it.
This episode has one of the weirdest of the stands so far that we've seen. And I will remind you, one of the stands that we've met so far has been Elephant Green and also a beetle that eats tongues.
Yeah,
so
and get a ready. Fucking ghost ship controlled by an orangutan.
Like... Yeah, so this is episode 34, The Devil. They've made it to Singapore. They're going to stay inside of a hotel, and they're just like, I hope this hotel's not crazy.
So they're going to argue over who gets to stay in what room. They're also getting a room for the still unnamed girl. And she doesn't want to share a room with any of them. And so they get a fourth room for her and are about to rack up a significant amount of room damage charges. And so they break off. There's two people in two of the rooms. And then... there's sort of an odd man out that was going to room with the girl, but then she wanted her own room. So that leaves Polnareff by himself. So he goes to his room and promptly, immediately is like, wow, I guess you guys aren't going to let us rest at all. Why don't you come on out? And this guy just climbs out of the refrigerator.
Yeah.
Also, apparently, like, later on, Polnareff is, like, pissed at him because he took the stuff out of the fridge so he could stuff himself into it. And Polnareff is like, you took everything out of the fridge and you didn't put it back.
Okay.
Anyway. So this guy's name is literally Soul Sacrifice. Not spelled weird, just those two words in order. And his stand is called Ebony Devil, which he summons, but you never see it. But except then it turns out we've been seeing it all along because it's a creepy doll sitting on the bedside table in the hotel room.
Can we discuss how fast you would leave a hotel room if you had a creepy doll that was just sitting there waiting
just
for you when you went into the hotel room?
Yeah. It's not like you're in like a bed and breakfast in the woods where there's a room full of dolls that's uncomfortable. Like, you're at a giant hotel in Singapore.
It doesn't make any sense. It's weird and it's freaky, and nobody says anything about
nobody
it until it starts attacking
it.
People.
There's not even a moment where Polnareff is like, this is weird that there's a doll sitting here. Like,
yeah.
It also moves several times. Like, not that he sees, but like, it's not where he left it. multiple times before it actually, like, turns out to, like, animate itself and attack him. And he continually never says anything about it or notes anything about it.
Yeah, so Self-Sacrifice is going to get into a quick fight with Polnareff. Polnareff is going to deal with him incredibly fast, throw him off the roof, and then get cut deep in his leg.
You got me!
They're going to find out that this ability of whatever this thing is called the Grudge, which all I can think of is just, like, you know, the Grudge.
Yeah.
What it's going to really turn into is a fight between Silver Chariot and this fucking ebony devil weird doll monster.
And what's cool about the Grudge ability is that essentially Ebony Devil is powered by the grudge that Soul Sacrifice has against his opponent. So he allows himself to get cut by the enemy so that he can fight them. And I liked that. That was a cool little bit.
So this doll is going to straight up murder like three people inside of the hotel before it even fucking gets to Jean.
There has to be gratuitous death around each stand fight. It's basically a requirement.
Yeah. So Ebony Devil is then going to get into a fight with Silver Chariot. The fight is pretty sweet, actually. This is going to be another one of those where I would. The fight is pretty generic. It kind of goes back and forth, and it has like. It has a couple of moments that are really cool and knockback moments, and then it's going to end with the Ebony Devil being impaled through the bed by Silver Chariot because Jean-Pierre used a mirror that's broken to see where he's going to be.
But when the fight starts, Polnareff gets tied to the bottom of the bed, and it turns out that Silver Chariot is pretty ineffective when Polnareff can't see where he's slashing, and so this has basically crippled him. Also, the fight is good largely because it's animated really well and it's directed.
That's what
really
I was gonna say.
Yeah,
this is one of the ones that I've seen for like JoJo's Bizarre Adventure like fights. Like best fights, if you look it up, like the AMVs and stuff like that, you'll usually find this one on there
because it's
actually pretty sweet. And it's one of those ones that I've said it before. I'll say it again. You should just pause the episode, go look up those fights, and you should watch this one. It's definitely worth taking a look because it's got like a good fighting style, and it's a really random two things fighting against each other. It's a like disembodied swordsman fighting a robot fighting against a doll that's basically has a spinning razor mouth thing.
It is
attached
quintessentially
to it. And also
anime.
A knife. It has like just a knife for some fucking reason.
Also, it's horrible teeth. The doll has these teeth. It's like basically a ventriloquist doll, and it has these like horrible sharp teeth on, you know, the top and bottom of its mouth, but also when it opens its mouth, it has like a spiral of teeth inside the mouth that can spin, and it's horrifying. Like, it's real good nightmare fuel, and I appreciate that.
The last beat of this episode after the defeat of Ebony Devil is going to be, Blake, tell us who's in the wrong.
JoJo Sr. is going to reveal that his stand doesn't require the destruction of cameras every time, and he actually can do it at TVs too, and I guess it doesn't require the destruction of the TV from what I can tell. And instead of creating a picture of the future, it basically turns the channels until it finds the words that it needs, and then it'll show whatever channel is going to say the next word until it has spelled out a message. It's kind of like a slow-moving message like you would get with a Ouija board or something. And I don't know why he fucking didn't do this earlier, because this is way better and more specific than looking at pictures that are vague and trying to tell what they're saying. But anyway, what it's going to tell him and Avdol, who's in the room with him, is that there is a traitor among them. And then it is going to specifically mention that Kakyoin, who we haven't mentioned at all this episode, but is one of the people traveling with JoJo, he's the guy that has Hierophant Green as his partner, that was JoJo's like first villain that he rescued by pulling the flesh bud out. It's going to turn out that Kakyoin is a traitor, and they're going to cut to JoJo walking with the unnamed girl, with Kakyoin walking behind them, looking all face shadowed and malicious and portentous, and that is where the episode ends.
All right, stick this with us. This was a good twist. These credits.
I'm excited. Yeah,
stick with us. Stick with us.
wait, before you stick with us, remember that we are going to be at KumoriCon in Portland. If you guys are going to also be there, let us know. Hit us up on the social medias, and we'd love to say hi to you.
Yeah. Anyways, stick with us after the credits, and we'll talk about what's happening next time.
Blake and Spencer Get Jumped is made by Forever Summer Productions.
With sound editing done by Rashad English of Plain English Productions. He's our level 5 sound wizard.
Our podcast is ad-free, and we want to keep it that way. If you want to keep it that way, too, please consider supporting us on Patreon.
Patreon members get exclusive member content and unlock group perks.
Follow us on Twitter at @BNSGetJumped. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/BlakeAndSpencerGetJumped. Or talk to us on Reddit at reddit.com/r/GetJumped.
If you like the show, please like, subscribe, and leave a review. Reviews help us chart on iTunes. And remember, new episodes come out every Sunday on your favorite podcast platform.
Next week on Blake and Spencer Get Jumped, we're going back to Hunter x Hunter.
We're going to see the very end of the Phantom Troop arc, and we're going to see the fight that we've all been waiting for.
Actually, that fight does not happen.
Son of a bitch.
A lot of talking.